or leads in any way is in a position of honor and a position of humility at the same time. I'm grateful for your continued trust in me as you continue to ask me to continue to come up here and continue to speak to you. I won't continue on too long today, I hope. We're grateful for everybody's presence. We're just passing through this world, but you're not just passing through here today. Each of you, I know, has made a choice to be here, and that speaks highly of you. It says that you're interested in spiritual things, and there is nothing more important than that. Anthropology. All of this that I'm about to read is from my favorite source, and yours, Wikipedia. Anthropology is the science of humanity. The term anthropology is from the Greek anthropos, man, understood to mean humankind or humanity, and logia, discourse or study. The first use of the term anthropology in English to refer to a natural science of humanity was apparently in 1593, the first of the logies to be coined. Sounds like something I'd write, but that was really there. Anthropology originated in the colonial encounter between Western people and colonized non-Western people. So when the Europeans went everywhere, they started bouncing into people who thought differently and did differently than they did, and they said, hey, let's study this. Now, I do have an issue with 1593 and anthropology originated in the colonial encounter. Turn to Genesis chapter 6. So this is saying the science of humanity originated somewhere around when England was spreading throughout the world. Genesis chapter 6, verse 5. The Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great on the earth, and that every intent of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. First of all, that word man there in the Septuagint, the Greek translation of the Hebrew Scriptures, is our word up here, anthropos. It's referring to humanity. There's no doubt about that in this passage. It sounds to me like the Lord was studying humanity. The Lord saw the wickedness of humanity on the earth. In fact, that word saw can be as a result of specific study. When the guards who were sent after Jesus came back and said, we're not getting him, Nicodemus said, do we try a man without knowing anything about him first? And they said, you're not from Galilee also. Search and see. That second word is our same word here, but the search part came first. Look carefully and you'll come to understand. God had been looking very carefully at man. Hebrews chapter 2. Hebrews chapter 2, this is talking about Jesus being greater than angels. In that, he's talking about how Jesus became a man. In verse 6, it is talking about mankind. It'll use Son of Man in reference to all of mankind. Verse 6, one has testified somewhere saying that what is man, here's our word again, that you remember him. Or the Son of Man, that you are concerned about him. That word concerned is to take, or the first definition of it, is to make a careful inspection. Look at, examine, inspect. Again, this here is saying, look, God, we know that you're examining us. And as a result of that, you're caring. If he didn't care for us, he wouldn't stare at us. But he's examining us. Again, the claim here is that anthropology, the study of humanity, originated in the 1400s, some will claim earlier. God is the one who originated it. In fact, God is the great anthropologist. Immanuel Kant, who anthropologists look up to, he was a philosopher. Immanuel Kant can't hold a candle to God himself. In fact, if there were a conference and there were Anthropologists invited hundreds, thousands. It doesn't matter what number you put on it. And God stepped in the room. You know what all of the rest of them would do? Run. God would be the only speaker there. Now, today's lesson is going to be what the great anthropologist has to say regarding individual people living in groups of people. That's pretty clear. Titus chapter 3. Go ahead and turn there. In Titus 3, look in verse 3. We also once were foolish ourselves. Okay, Paul here is going to address the human being as they relate to different people, but first, the human being all by itself, each individual. We ourselves, that's me. I could be myself with it without anybody around. Disobedient, deceived, enslaved to various lusts and pleasures, spending our life in malice and envy. Okay, the Bible looks at people as individuals. Renew your mind. I can do that without anybody else around. Pray without ceasing. That's for Lee. Then the Bible looks at individuals as they interact with other people. We were, the last part of verse 3 says, hating one another. There suddenly somebody else stepped into the picture, right? Then it also deals with, the Bible deals with, in Titus 3, also deals with a human being as they interact with a whole group of other human beings. Chapter 3, verse 1. Remind them to be subject to rulers, to authorities, to be obedient. Okay, this is talking about a machine of a society. There's a government. It is a machine, a system of an entire society. This is saying, look, this is how you interact with that machine, which is part of the society. The branch, if you were to look this up on Wikipedia or anywhere else, the branch of anthropology that we're talking about here is social anthropology. Now, notice, chapter 3, verse 1, remind them. That's imperative. You, Timothy, Titus, you're going to do something. God is behind this all. He's the one instructing them. Remind them to be subject to rulers, to authorities, to be obedient, to be ready for every good deed, to malign no one, to be peaceable, to be gentle. We have the great anthropologist's suggestions. We have his observations. So let me tell you, I'm not going to talk much. In fact, I'm going to talk hardly anything at all about worlds, the world's anthropologist. After all, if you had the doctor, and then you had a kindergartner who had made some observations on the same subject, who would you consult? Obviously, the doctor. In fact, you wouldn't even mention the kindergartner. We're going to talk only about what God has said. Some simple reminders here. This is nothing new for anybody in here, I don't think. Just a reminder. Number one, the Christian and the civil law. We're in this little passage here. A Christian obeys the laws of the land. That's the statement to be made. The Christian obeys the laws of the land. Verse 1 of Titus 3. Remind them to be subject to rulers, to authorities, to be obedient, to be ready for every good deed. Remember this expression, ready for every good deed. But in the meantime, remind them to be subject to rulers, to authorities. Unless you're the type of person that questions what the definition of is, this is so clear, you cannot miss it. This isn't the only passage. 1 Peter chapter 2. 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 13. Submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every human institution. Every human institution. And then he'll enumerate some specific ones, whether to the king or to the governor, verse 14. So here's the king who's over the whole kingdom, and then there's the governor who's over just a little part of the kingdom. We're talking about local, state, national, international, and intergalactic authority. If there's an authority, they are to submit themselves to this authority or to governors, verse 14, as sent by him for the punishment of evildoers and the praise of those who do right. For such is the will of God, that by doing right, you may silence the ignorance of foolish men. Act as free men. Do not use your freedom as a covering for evil, but use it as bond slaves for God. Honor all people, love the brotherhood, fear God, honor the king. Again, it doesn't get much clearer than this. The Christian submits to the laws of the land. A couple things about this. Did you notice? Verse 14, it said, the governors, they're sent by him. Whether him here refers to the king or to God is a matter of debate. Grammatically, you can't really figure it out. But we know from Romans chapter 13 that God is behind it all. So you can go all the way back to God if you want to. Sent by God for the punishment of evildoers and the praise of those who do right. And somebody will say, but no government does this. At least not 100%. And we agree. In fact, the government that Peter was writing under at that time, you remember that guy. Some will then go on to conclude, since no government does this, we don't have to obey it. Well, Peter, Paul, remember John wrote under Vespasian? These guys are killing Christians. And yet he's writing, you have to obey the law. So just because the government doesn't do what it should do doesn't mean you have to, you get a scot-free pass here. Another point to be made. Verse 16. Act as free men. Do not use your freedom as a covering for evil, but use it as bond slaves to God. You remember Titus chapter 3, verse 1, I told you to remember a little term, a little statement, to be ready for every good deed. That sounds a lot like being bond slaves for God. Now, turn to, by the way, keep your finger here for a moment, and turn to 1 Timothy. First Timothy chapter 2. First of all, then, I urge that entreaties and prayers, petitions and thanksgivings be made on behalf of all men, for kings and all who are in authority. Not only does a Christian submit to the government, but the Christian prays for that government. That's a characteristic of a Christian, praying for the government. So that we may lead a tranquil and quiet life in all godliness and dignity. Yes. Ha-ha. I pray to the government so that I can have this peaceful life. I can go out there to Redwood and nobody disturbs me while I do what I want. I go golfing. Hey, look, I want to live in a free land where I can make enough money to go golfing. Well, obviously, we studied this morning in Luke chapter 12 that that's not the right attitude. What did he say? A tranquil and quiet life in all godliness and dignity. That word can be translated seriousness. Christians are serious people in their freedom. They're godly people in their freedom. Now, it sounds a bunch like to be ready for every good deed, although it doesn't sound exactly like it. And bond servants of God. We've seen that so far. We said, hey, Titus says, you be ready for every good deed. Peter says, you be bond servants of God. Paul here writes, you be ready to live in all godliness. Now listen to what he goes on to say. This is good and acceptable in the sight of our Savior, God our Savior, who desires all men to be saved and to come to the knowledge of the truth. Interesting. Live in a free land so that you can... The next thing you see is people are getting saved. What's in between there? The people who are praying for peace and tranquility and living in all godliness are going out in the society and preaching the gospel to everybody else. That's why we have a free land. Don't mistake that. We live in the home of the brave and the land of the free. I am so afraid of the abuse of that liberty. What's the reason for it? So that we can spend our time not only preaching the gospel, but every good deed that a Christian should do. But the emphasis here is preaching the gospel. Never forget that. Now, back in Hebrews, is that no, 1 Peter is where I was, sorry. So back there in 1 Peter chapter 2, one more passage, one more thought to look at. Verse 13 says, submit yourselves for the Lord's sake, to every human institution. Why do you obey the government? Because you want to? Some governments, that's easy. Yes, I love that law. I want to submit to that law. That's not submission. I like that too. Is it because you think it's reasonable? Submit to the government and this law because you think it's reasonable. That's not what this says. In fact, literally is, submit yourselves because of the Lord. Because God. Submit yourselves because God. That's what it says. We don't submit because it's in us. We submit because God wants us to. That's why we submit. Now, Romans chapter 13 is relevant to this very discussion. Romans 13. Every person, verse 1, every person is to be in subjection to the governing authorities. Sounds clear again, right? There's no mistake in that one. For there is no authority except from God, and those which exist are established by God. Now, let's take a break here. It's saying the same thing. We left off at, you submit because God tells you to. Not because you want to, although hopefully you do want to. Not because you think it's reasonable. You submit because God tells you to. Now here, the minute that you step over the line and you start disobeying the government, listen carefully. Submit to the government, verse 1. Verse 2, therefore, here's the opposite scenario. There's class A and class B. Class A submits to God. What about those who don't submit to God, or the government, excuse me? Verse 2, therefore, whoever resists authority has opposed the ordinance of God. Sounds strange. Black and white, 55. Indirectly behind that is God. They who have opposed will receive condemnation upon themselves, for rulers are not a cause for fear of good behavior, but of evil. Evil behavior. Break the law, evil behavior. Do you want to have no fear of authority? Do what is good, and you will have praise from the same. For it is a minister of God to you for good, but if you do what is evil, again, be afraid. For it does not bear the sword in vain. Now that's the maximum penalty. In this country, you don't get your head chopped off because you broke the speed limit. But in theory, in this country, if you murder somebody, the sword comes back to your head. It is a minister of God and an avenger who brings wrath on the one who practices evil. Therefore, it is necessary to be in subjection, not only because of wrath, but also for the sake of conscience. Now, once you have defined what the law is, and I'm not going to spend the rest of my lesson debating how to define that, once you have defined what the law is, once they've defined what the law is, that you have to obey. That's the law. Now, did you notice in 1 Peter 2:13 it had said every government. In Romans 13 here it says every person. Now, as a side comment very quickly, there's no wiggle room in there. Every government, every person. If you're alive and you're under a government, then those government's laws you've got to obey. And I'm going to throw in there every law. Now, I know that I just got some people staring at me. Why do you say every law? Let's look at the exception. Okay? Acts 5. I'm actually not saying every law absolutely. Okay? I'm going to define it. In Acts chapter 4, Peter and the apostles had been told by the council, stop preaching. They said, basically, we can't stop preaching. We're not going to stop preaching. And they didn't stop preaching. They get caught again. They get dragged in before the local authorities. Verse 34. Verse 27. When they had brought them, they stood before the council. This is like standing before the local magistrate here, right? The high priest questioned them, saying, we gave you strict orders not to continue teaching in this name, and yet you have filled Jerusalem with your teaching and intend to bring this man's blood upon us? But Peter and the apostles answered, we must obey God rather than man. Understand, what I am saying here is every other law. Every law that does not conflict with God's laws, we must obey. We must obey. You ever hear the expression, the exception proves the rule? This is one place that you would actually apply that. How many other exceptions do you read in the New Testament of when a Christian cannot obey God's the law, the civil law? There is no other exception. This is the one exception which proves in every other case you must obey the law. There is one exception. There is no authority for any other exception. So, this has been simple. I said it would be simple. Here it is. Every government, every person, every law except those who conflict with or which conflict with God's laws. Point number two. The Christian and the culture law. What I mean by that is you live in a culture and basically the law is you live in that culture and by that culture, whatever culture you're in. It's going to vary from place to place. Okay. Romans 12, which I think you are somewhere around, or you're probably in Acts back there in Romans. Romans 12, verse 18. If possible, so far as it depends on you, be at peace with all men. Now, there are ways to sever that peace. One is you can walk up to somebody and say, you look funny. I don't recommend that. It's unkind, and it won't keep the peace. There's another way. Implicitly, the way you dress will implicitly, or something you do, not necessarily the way you dress, that's just an example, will implicitly cast unnecessary aspersions on those people. Hey, you know, it doesn't matter. There are things that are amoral. They're neither moral nor immoral, if you will. Like the color blue. I like to wear a blue jacket. Is it right or wrong? It doesn't matter. If everybody everywhere wears a blue jacket and I wear a red one, what does that say about everybody who wears a blue jacket? That says, you know, I think you're different, when in fact you're going to be the one that's different, right? But the idea is, you fit in the society. Now, verse 17, never pay back evil for evil to anyone. Respect what is right in the sight of all men. Titus chapter 3, it said, showing every consideration for all men. That word respect is take thought for. Think about the society that you live in, what they think is right, and then pay attention to that. We say, when in Rome, do as the Romans do. Verse 7 of chapter 13, render to all what is due them. Tax to whom tax, custom to whom custom, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor. In Leviticus 19:32, which we should have got to this week, I don't think we did, you shall rise up before the gray-headed and honor the aged. Why rise up and not bow down? I don't know, other than that's probably in their culture. There are other, you know the word prostrate? You know the word worship? It means to throw yourself on the ground, and you do it to some people. So say there's an old person that comes in and he's a ruler. Do you fall down on the ground or do you stand up? Whatever custom for that specific moment requires is really the point. Here are some other customs around the world. In Hungary, where Marcy and I lived for several years, you must use sir, the equivalent of sir, for anybody that's older than you are or anybody you don't know. Anybody. That's the respect. Now, that's actually not so different from mister here. It's not so very different. If you don't use mister for somebody that you don't really know or that's, you know, older than you, it's iffy, but it's not so different. Okay. But there, for those that you don't say mister to, you just drop the mister and you call them by their last name. Bosworth. I call him Mr. Bosworth. Moore. That swings the other way for us. That's like totally casual, but for them it's not. For them, it's not casual, it's just what they do. If we were in a business setting, I wouldn't say, hey, Moore, why don't you come on over here and let's do that? But over there, they would. And so when you're over there, that's what you do. Sounds a little different. In the gypsy culture, over here when we have a wedding, we say, I do, I do. We slip the ring on the other person's finger. We'll stop there. And in the Roma culture, the gypsy culture, you know what they do? They jump over a broom. Guess what? Next time you go to the gypsy culture and you get married, plan to jump over the broom. Because when you're in Roma, do as the Romas do. I have read that in Tibet, in certain places, they greet each other by sticking out their tongue at one another. The history is that they thought somebody was going to come back to life, and if he did, he was a bad person, came back with a black tongue. And so to show that you're not that person coming back to life, you stick out your tongue to show them that you're not the evil person. I don't know what happened to the people who ate black licorice before they met somebody. Careful. But the point is, if you're going to go there, that's their greeting. And so in some situations, you're going to stick out your tongue. Sounds odd, but that's the culture. The burqa, the covering that the Muslim woman wears. In Pakistan, it is not illegal, it is not the law to wear it. It's not a national law. There are some localities where it is the law. There are some localities where it is not the law, but yet they all wear it. Do you know what the Christians do when they go there, the Christian women? They put it on. Next time you're going to Pakistan, or wherever the case might be, you're going to put on the burqa to fit in. Two pictures, two brothers, two preachers, two very different places. For some of you who don't know, this is Dan Bunting, Don Bunting's son. This is Tim Bunting, Don Bunting's other son. This man preaches in Albany, New York. This man preaches in New York City. Now, we're talking two different people here. In some cultures, he's cool and he's a tool. In other cultures, he's a preacher and he's a punk. He does his job in his culture. He does his job in his culture. If he goes back down there, maybe he's going to do that. Not necessarily. His father didn't. If he goes up there, maybe he's going to want to change his hair. This guy with his tie on. Huh. He's preaching in that. He don't have to wear a tie to preach, obviously, right? But they're fitting into their cultures. In fact, I'm reminded of Paul, what Paul writes in 1 Corinthians chapter 9. Verse 19. Though I am free from all men, I have made myself a slave to all so that I might win more. To the Jews, I became as a Jew. Listen to what he does. I became as a Jew so that I might win more Jews. To those who are under the law, and insert here, I became as under the law, though not being without the law myself, so that I might win those who are under the law. To those who are without the law, I became as those who are without the law, though not being without the law of God, but under the law of Christ, so that I might win more. Verse 22, to the weak I became weak, that I might win the weak. I have become all things to all men, so that I may by all means save some. Here you have a guy running around when he's in Rome, acting as the Romans do. Now, a couple things about this. First of all, do you notice, verse 21, those who are without law, as without law, though not being without the law myself. In other words, he would fit into a culture as far as God's law would let him. In Hungary, I had the opportunity to go hunting one time. Afterward, do you know what they did? Shots of whiskey. You know what I didn't do? Shots of whiskey. I went with them as far as I could, and then I had to stop. Racism. Again, in Hungary, sorry, that's where I lived for a little while. They are racist against Orientals. And I had to preach on, you don't be racist against Orientals. When I was there, I didn't become racist against Orientals. because that would be against God's law, right? Now, you notice it said over and over and over that Paul did these things that he may win more. He was doing it to convert people. Now, one of two things is going on here. Either he would have done it anyway, because that's what the Bible says, fit in wherever you go, or here we have the reason you fit in wherever you go, so that you can convert more people. You're not the odd person. Oh, look at him. I don't want to be like this person. No, you just fit in, and you're more likely to, hey, I'll listen to you. Tim Bunting goes some places, people aren't going to listen to him. Dan Bunting goes some places, people aren't going to listen to him. It's a simple theory. The last point. The Christian and living in a civil culture. What do I mean by this, a civil culture? I mean, we are so advanced from Neanderthal man, aren't we? We are so much wiser. We are no longer ignorant. We know so much more. We have come. So, we are mature here in America, especially, and Europe. Oh, that society. Here's a principle that we need to get. Just because it's legal doesn't mean a Christian should do it. Just because it's legal doesn't mean a Christian can do it. Remember what he said? Act as free men. Do not use your freedom as a covering for evil. It's legal. I'll do it. 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 1. Does any one of you, when he has a case against his neighbor, dare to go to law before the unrighteous and not before the saints? What he's saying here is, Christians, work it out among yourselves. Don't air your dirty laundry. That's the result. How would you air your dirty laundry? Two Christians get in a fight, they go to court. Paul is saying, guys, you figure it out on your own. They could reply, well, it's legal. Here, let me give you another illustration. If you go to McDonald's, order some coffee, spill it on yourself, burn yourself, I'll take them to court. It's legal. But just because it's legal, do not use your freedom as a covering for what is actually evil. It's legal to get drunk in this country. It's legal. It's legal now to have gay marriage in New York State. It's legal. Are we going to justify our actions by that? Not at all. That's the point. Now, here is a specific application. And I want to be very careful. I'm going to talk about this because it is rampant in America and becoming more. Here's the specific application. Accepting government assistance. Now, understand, there are times when people are in need. I myself have accepted government assistance. I'm not justifying accepting government assistance by my actions. I'm just saying I have done it. But there's a difference between a safety net and a hammock. That's the point we're trying to make. There's a difference between a safety net and a hammock. 1 Samuel chapter 8. They want a king. They come to Samuel and say, give us a king. Samuel goes to God and says, they want a king. God says, give him a king. But before you give him a king, let them know what's going to happen. Now look for two things. Number one, people being unreasonably taxed. Number two, redistribution of income. That's what's happening in here. So Samuel, verse 10, spoke all the words of the Lord to the people who asked him of him a king. He said, this will be the procedure of the king who will reign over you. He will take. That's what we call taxes. Although it's a little different, but that's the point. He's going to take your sons and place them for himself in his chariots and among his horsemen, and they will run before his chariots. We actually haven't gotten to redistribution completely yet, although it is a little bit of it. He will appoint for himself commanders of the thousands, of fifties, some to do his plowing, to reap his harvest, and to make his weapons of war and equipment for his chariots. He will also take your daughters and performers and cooks and bakers. He will take the best of your fields and your vineyards and your olive groves, and he will redistribute them. He will give them to his servants. He will take the tenth of your seed and of your vineyards and give to his officers and to his servants. He will also take your male servants and your female servants and the best of your young men, your donkeys, and use them for his work. He will take a tenth of your flocks, and you yourselves will become his servants. Did you see it in there? Here's the question for you. First of all, there's redistribution. There are people being unreasonably taxed. That's the point of the warning. The warning is, they're going to do things that are unreasonable. Now's your chance to stop it. And they say, no, give it to us anyways. But the weight of the warning is in its unreasonableness. They're going to unreasonably tax you, and they're going to redistribute it. How did those who had worked and were unreasonably taxed feel about this situation? What do you think they did? When they saw that servant over there, I don't mean servant as in slave, I mean minister of the government, with everything that they had worked for, and the minister had not worked for that, how do you think they felt? To ask it is to answer it. Do you know that in America now, they will pay for your cable television and give you a cell phone? What do you think of that? Cell phones! Come get your cell phone from the government. Are the hairs on the back of your neck standing up? What if, I admit, I recognize that there are some times when people are in need, Christians are in need, I understand. But cable television is out of the realm of need. Cell phones are too. What if you saw a Christian with one of those cell phones? Would you not be saddened? They've drunk the Kool-Aid. That's what we're talking about here. So you go up to one of them and say, hey, you know, what's going on here, or whatever it is. I myself, when I'm reasoning through everything that I want and how I can get it, I have tried to justify it with, it's my tax dollars. I want them back. There are a couple issues with this. Number one, if I take that cell phone that I meant to not drive on a road, because my tax dollars really went to that road, if I take that cable television or whatever else, there are many things available in the hammock, then I better jump on the airplane with the military people and go over there and serve with them, because my money that went to that cell phone that I'm now using didn't go to them. The point is, the pot's only so big. And if you're taken for this, then you can't use the other stuff. Not and be fair. If everybody thought this way, if everybody who put in thought this way, what would happen to the system? It would crash. This sounds like I'm about to talk about politics. I'm not. Although that God did give them. This is your opportunity to stop this. You want to take your opportunity? Stop it. That's what God was doing in 1 Samuel chapter 8. I'm not talking about politics. I'm saying that the position is unreasonable. And a Christian ought not find themselves in this position. And by the way, those who qualify for these things are who? The rich? No. They're the quote-unquote poor. Now wait a minute. The poor are justifying using these things for the taxes they have paid. Last I knew, the poor don't pay many taxes. It doesn't work out. And by the way, speaking of taxes, twice in Romans it said, pay your taxes. We talked earlier about a Christian obeys the government. One of them is a Christian pays the taxes. Now, a Christian never tries to cheat the government. That's not what a Christian does. A Christian does not cheat the government. There are exceptions, legal exceptions. Get the IRS book, get them. Do all you can to work the system. But what about the Christian who does everything under the table? That's not in a Christian's vocabulary. Let me end by talking about work. 2 Thessalonians chapter 3. You know, in all this, you could argue, it's legal. It is legal. Everybody's doing it. But we've already seen, just because it's legal doesn't mean you can do it. In 2 Thessalonians chapter 3 and verse 10, even when we were with you, we used to give you this order. If anyone is not willing to work, then he is not to eat either. But they can have a cell phone. But they can have cable television. That's being inconsistent. If you're not willing to work, then you're not to eat either. That's God's position on this discussion. 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 8. If anyone does not provide for his own, especially for those of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. If anyone does not provide for his own, I don't get the sense from reading the New Testament that this includes food stamps. I provided for my own. I signed up in the line. Look at all the work I did this morning. You don't get that sense. The sense in the New Testament is you go out and you work for it and you provide. By the way, notice they have denied the faith. This is not something that just toss around lightly in your mind, in your life. You could argue, but everybody's doing it. Do whatever you can to be at peace with all men, especially those who were robbed. Paul uses the word rob of the church. I'm overstating a little bit there, but you get the point. Those who have find themselves in the situation where they're being taxed for things that they don't agree with. 1 Thessalonians. Oh, I'm sorry, we're going to skip that and go to Acts chapter 20. If you read Paul, several times in several different churches, he writes to them, I wasn't a burden on you. Ephesus is one of those places. Verse 33, I have coveted no man's silver or gold or clothes. You yourselves know that these hands ministered to my own needs and the men who were with me. I worked with my hands. Here is the kicker. Have you ever heard of bread in a circus? All they need is bread in a circus. Do you know what that was? Government welfare. 123 BC, it went into effect. Paul could have said, they would have said, look, we're not supporting you, but go down to the welfare office, get your grain, and you can make your bread. They could have said that to him. And you know what he would have said to them? I've got my two hands. I will not go down there while I have my two hands. I will work. Now listen carefully to the very next point. I'm going to read it again. You yourselves know that these hands have ministered to my needs and to the men who are with me. In everything, I showed you. He's teaching them by his very actions how they are to live. That, by working hard in this manner, you must help the weak. You have to help the weak. How? By working hard. The Christian is not on the system. The Christian is providing for others. You must help the weak and remember the words of the Lord Jesus. If I had one verse to talk about this entire discussion, here it is. It is more blessed to give than to receive. The Christian, if they don't have to be, is not on the system. Could you imagine if Paul went to Greece now, if anybody pays attention to what's happening in Greece now? What if he came to America? What if he came to Philadelphia? Where am I? And where are you? Remember this. It is more blessed to give than to receive. When it comes to what you're doing with the government, here is your motto. Jesus, the one who said it's more blessed to give than to receive, certainly knows what he's talking about. And he gave us his entire life and his death so that we could be saved. I haven't talked about the plan of salvation. You can hear the gospel. You can believe it. You can confess, repent, and be baptized. And then you can get on the true gravy train. The one where you will be blessed with all that Jesus has to bless you in this life and in the next. That's open to everybody. You don't have to fill out a form. You don't even have to stand in line. Nowadays, we want to invite you to take advantage of this as we stand and sing the song that's been chosen. Number 5.